Welcome to the Casey Kohar Show, a celebration of words. My guest today is David Baldacci, and we will be discussing The Collectors, his new book published by Warner Books. And this is a return visit for Mr. Baldacci. And first of all, David, congratulations on the success of the Camel Club. It was very well received, and fans of the Camel Club are going to be delighted when they read The Collectors, I believe.
Thank you very much.
The Camel Club, Oliver Stone, Milton Farb, Ruben Rose, and Caleb Shaw, it seems to be a group of guys that you, when you wrote the first book, The Camel Club, you created a cast of characters that you kind of almost had to do something again with them, didn't you?
I really did. The litmus test for me with characters like that is that at the end of the book, do I want to spend more time with them, and do I think that they have more room to grow as characters? I think the answers to those questions with the Camel Club were resounding yes, I did. I wanted to spend more time with them, and I definitely think they had more room to develop, and I had sort of built into the backstories of each of them some interesting things that I could later exploit in future books, and I like hanging out with them. I really do.
And as a reader, as I was reading the Collectors, I had that same sense of familiarity, and I was so glad you did it. Were there any times, there's some very strong characters in the Collectors. Roger Seagraves is an important character, and one of the things that you talk about with in the Collectors and in the Camel Club is that with the changes in technology and the internet, how readily accessible things are. Roger Seagraves is a guy that the CIA they've allowed some employees to come in from the cold, which they didn't in the past.
Right.
And he's an interesting character, and he's able to procure some things, David, on the internet. And you do, I know all of your books are well-researched. Is some of the things that he's able to procure, or are those a reality? Are those things people actually can go online and get?
Absolutely, absolutely. Anything that you want to do to commit any type of crime are available on the internet. Some of them are actually public sites where you can go and buy things that you would need that maybe they might seem sort of innocuous, but given a bad intent, you can take those same things and do bad things with them. But there are also sites on there that are known to criminal elements where you can go and hire hitmen, where you can go and get plans for explosives, where you can actually buy equipment you need to go out and commit crimes. So the internet has been a great boon for people. I think it's a terrific positive tool. But at the same time, you're never going to have something that powerful that it won't be used for bad purposes. And certainly the internet is used for bad purposes.
And David, another character who really comes to life in The Collectors is Annabelle Conroy. And we're not going to give any of the plot away, as listeners know, I never do, but there's an interesting story with Annabelle Conroy and Jerry Bagger where she goes out to Las Vegas. And that's an interesting section of The Collectors because you also kind of take a look at what's going on out in Vegas technologically, but the old human factor, greed, is still well alive in the world, isn't it?
It is. I mean, Jerry Bagger is sort of a throwback. He was actually ran a casino in Vegas, but he was so old school and brutal to people who tried to cheat him that he sort of threw him out. And he took up space in Atlantic City and built a casino there. But at the same time, casinos these days are enormous. They are money printing machines, and they have so much cash flow flowing through those places, it's beyond belief. So for a con artist like Annabelle Conroy, you go where the money is, you go where the biggest marks are. But she has a personal reason, obviously people will find out when they read the book, to go after Jerry Bagger. But I loved Annabelle Conroy's character, and she'll be back in the next Camel Club book as well. And I think she brings kind of a sexy new edge to the Camel Club and kicks them a little bit, and I think raises them up to another level, and also allows some of them to have, she allows their characters to have more development as well. You can see Annabelle reacting with Oliver Stone, for instance, and seeing that she's sort of drawing some of the things out of his past. So I think together they really make a great team.
I agree. And The Collectors is it's an interesting phenomenon, collecting. And I have been a book collector for a long time, and I think people that are bibliophiles will really like this book because Jonathan DeHaven figures into the plot, and he's a director of rare books and special collections at the Library of Congress. And the world of rare book collecting is really a fascinating world, and I think the reader will find out a lot about that world when they read The Collectors. And David, how familiar were you with that world of book collecting prior to writing this book?
I do some book collecting on my own as well, and I've got a number of first editions, some signed, some not, from authors, both contemporary and also in the past, that I really admire. So I was somewhat familiar with them. I've gone to rare bookstores, and I've met people who collect rare books, and I've visited some museums, and know a lot of people down at the Library of Congress. But with that said, I didn't know a lot about the rare books division of the Library of Congress until about 2 or 3 years ago, where I was introduced to it through when I did one of the events at the National Book Festival, and fell in love with the place and decided then and there that I really wanted to include it in some type of story. And probably in the back of my mind, that's where I made Caleb Shaw an employee there, because I thought at some point I'd like to write a story about the rare books room. And all the stuff in the book is true as far as collecting goes, and this mania that people have for book collecting. It's a highly specialized world. Everybody knows everybody else, and it truly is a world of obsession. And if people want an object, they will do almost anything to get it. And I tried to bring that out a little bit in the book through the character of Vincent Pearl, and also through Caleb Shaw, who obviously is a lover of books. But I thought balancing, you know, sort of this genteel world of book collecting with the world of sort of espionage and violence, and also the con. I don't think those three elements have ever been included in the thriller before, but I thought that they really made great bedfellows, and I think it all sort of blended together very well and let the reader sort of have a slice of each of these sort of exciting areas.
I agree completely, because John Dunning has written some beautiful books about book collecting. And in The Collectors, you get into some of the differentiations of truly rare books, the different points that the collections have. A lot of books are sold on the internet claiming to be first editions that aren't. You have to be very, very careful when you're buying something that's a rare book.
Oh, you really do. There are lots of, you know, scams out there where people will be selling you something that, and there's so many different points that distinguish what a first edition is from a first run, from something else, that if you're a novice, or even if you just have a little bit of experience, you can still be taken by people who know a lot more than you do.
Yeah, exactly. And David, with the Camel Club and now The Collectors, what are you happiest with in terms of with what you've done with The Collectors with the characters? What are you happiest with now that the book is put to bed and is available in bookstores? As an author, what are you happiest about?
I think I was happiest with the fact that I was able to bring out more of the humanity and the characters, and more of the chemistry among the Camel Club members. There's more humor in this book because the situations they were in, and Caleb Shaw in particular, sort of his idiosyncrasies, and he was a very good comic foil. But I think the fact that I was able to bring out more of Oliver Stone's backstory and let people see a glimpse more of what he's about and who he is, and some readers may not get it, but Oliver Stone, you know, also was one of the guys at the CIA way back when who did jobs that nobody likes to talk about, but they were deemed necessary for the interests of the United States. Roger Seagraves did that very same job. But the two men, after their careers of that, doing that, were over, took very different paths in life. And Oliver Stone sort of spent the rest of his life trying to redeem himself from what he thought were, you know, bad things that he had done in the past, even though they were on behalf of his country. Roger Seagraves went the other direction. You know, it's interesting. It's almost like football players in the field. We expect them to be very physical, very violent, very aggressive on the field, and then off the field when they get into trouble and run into problems with the law or domestic abuse, we seem astonished by that, even though we train them every second of their lives to be, you know, what they are. And the same with a character like Roger Seagraves. He was trained to kill people, and he did it very well, very methodically, and he was above the law because he had sort of the support of the United States government behind him. But now that he's retired, we expect him to just go back to be a law-abiding citizen and fully realizing that all the laws apply to him and he shouldn't go out and do bad things anymore. You know, what with human beings, that's not going to happen all the time, and I think Roger Seagraves is a prime example of that. So in the book, one of the things I was proud of is showing how two men with the same occupations, once they were released from that, can take two very different paths in life. One can be sort of guilty about what he did. The other one embraces it and does it even more. And that shows the difference in people. And I think we have to be aware of that in real life, that can't expect people to do sorts of jobs like that, and then when that job is over, expect them to be just perfect citizens again. That's not going to happen.
Mm-hmm. That's a very good point. Very good point. And David, when you're doing the research on this, you have to stay on top of the changes in technology. And one of the characters in the book, Trent, the government spends a lot of time kind of in like a counter-terrorism, doesn't it? Trying to figure out what the bad guys are doing, trying to get our information and distribute it. And there's a whole division that's trying to figure out who's trying to steal the information, isn't there?
Yes, there is, because that's a huge concern of the government. You have spies everywhere. And spies and espionage can sometimes come from the most unlikely places, even people in government you thought were your allies. So you don't have just a short list of bad countries that you have to keep your eye on. You have to keep your eye on everyone. And particularly, sometimes you go where the money is, and spies are spies. They don't sell it because they want to do good, and they think the country's bad. They sell it 9 times out of 10 because they want to make money and they want to get paid, and that certainly was Roger Seagrave's motivation in the story. I've always been amused because where I live in Virginia, there are probably more spies per capita than any place, and they often get caught in a park that's right down the road from my son plays baseball. And it's always amazing that these really smart, savvy people who are spies and are smart enough to rip off the government then go to a park and drop the stuff off and pick up their cash, and wow, there's the FBI, and they get arrested. With Roger Seagrave in this book, I wrote it like how I would do it if I were a spy, and for me, it's foolproof. It's bulletproof because it's like the government would never suspect how the pickup took place, how the exchanges take place, how the information's gotten out. And for me, that was, you know, in a sort of an odd way, that was the most fun of the book, figuring out how to do it. On another side note, I'm called up periodically by consultants to the government, as are a lot of writers and screenwriters, to think of doomsday scenarios. They'll give me a doomsday scenario. You know, how would you blow up the Super Bowl? And then they want me to come up with a creative way to do it. I tell them, and then they will, you know, reverse engineer it to see if they can prevent it. So in this book, you know, it was my task, I thought, to come up with a way where spies could steal stuff and pass it on and get it out of the country, and the government would never be able to catch them.
Oh, that's interesting. That's fascinating. I'd not heard that. So you actually do get approached with those type of scenarios.
Yeah, I do. Yeah, they will give you a task, a certain thing, whether it be blowing up a pipeline or, you know, trying to disrupt a public event, and using your creative juices, you think outside the box and present them with the way you think it can be done, and then they'll take it and they'll try to come up with a plan to try to defeat it.
Interesting. Our guest today is David Baldacci. We're discussing The Collectors, published by Warner Books. And David, it sounds like you've mined kind of a gold mine here with the Camel Club. Is it safe to assume that we're going to be meeting the characters in the Camel Club again down the road?
Yes, it will be. I even after I finished The Collectors, even before I finished it, I knew I was going to bring them back again. The resolution at the end of The Collectors screams out for another sequel. I'm thrilled at bringing Annabelle Conroy back again. I think she adds a lot to the club. She was a character that I sort of created, you know, piece by piece, but with a sort of a mind that I knew what she was going to look like at the end of the day. Mm-hmm. And I wanted a really cool sort of lady who was never flustered, who was really quick on her feet, but who was very guarded. You know, she could walk into a room and sell you a story like you wouldn't believe, and you would believe every piece of it. But at the same time, you never really got to learn much about her. And I thought it would be fun to take a con artist who speaks out of both sides of her mouth, is really glib, and sell you lie after lie after lie, and you will believe it, and put her in Washington, D.C., and see how beautifully she fits in right away.
Oh, that's funny. That's funny. Very good. Well, David, congratulations on The Collectors. It's a great read. I know it's going to be a great success for you. The Camel Club is available in paperback. And let's do this. When the next book in the series comes out, we'll get together again and tell the listeners, update them on what's going on with The Camel Club. In the meantime, people can whet their appetite with The Collectors.
That sounds great. We'll do it again.
Okay. Well, thanks so much for your time, David.
Thank you.